So defined benefit structure, kind of what we all have is commercial insurance, right? For a price, you get a certain number of benefits. And then, you know, you portion the cost, mostly 80-20 are plans like that. So and then there's the other kind, the defined contribution plan, which we, you know, sometimes expect to take off. I really thought this would have taken off 15 years ago, but it hasn't. Now, you see it more and more in terms of high deductible plans. That gets me to the next slide, I think. Well, so the other thing just to know is ERISA, right? And so that is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, probably one of the most powerful pieces of legislation ever passed, completely unintended consequence. But the key thing to remember is that, at least in this state, for a commercial insurer, probably more than 80% of their business is ERISA-sponsored employer plans. I'm aware of pretty major insurer in the Metroplex that has 94% of their business is an ERISA-sponsored plan. They only have, you know, 6% in what we would consider fully funded HMO or PPO products. Have you heard this story before? Flexible spending accounts are how the Cramer sisters got their braces. It used to be $5,000. They were 2.5 years apart. So for 4 years, that covered the cost of their braces. So you put money in, pre-tax money, and you can use it for different medical expenses. It still exists. The amounts went down. They've gone up a little bit again. You probably have those as part of your... I mean, I still use it just because of co-payments and deductibles. The other variant of that is a health savings account. These are usually have to be matched with a high deductible medical plan. These are a little different in that you can keep this money, you know, flexible spending account. If you don't use it, you lose it, right? That's the danger. This money can kind of roll over. And again, if you're going to solve the healthcare spending, give the people their own money to spend. They'll spend less. Right? I mean, just the way it's going to go. So, next thing is a health maintenance organization that is type of health insurance company in the state, separately licensed, that it basically is allowed to provide set medical benefits in return for per member, per month capitation payment. And this was pretty big. I got to Texas Health Resources back in 1993. Much bigger at that point in time. They fell out of favor because a lot of times the network of physicians was restricted, and Texans don't like to have their choices restricted in any way. So not as big a part of the business as before. Corporate practice of medicine. We're one of the few states that still enforces a corporate practice of medicine. Now, the big hole in this enforcement is, you know, Section 162B of the Occupations Code now, which allows for that ANHC that I talked about before. So the Texas Health Resources, the Texas Health Physicians Group, is a 162B with 1,100 providers. And we actually have a couple of 162Bs that kind of hang off it to do various things. It is basically... copied the California exception for the corporate practice of medicine. So if you want any more information, can kind of look out there and see some of the things they've done. But that it's basically the same scheme that they have out there.
I will add that corporate practice is making a comeback in like New Jersey and New York and North Carolina, all these places, because people are getting really frustrated with all the private equity roll-ups. Use that friendly PC model on a y'all are familiar with that workaround. And so I've seen, it's something people used to be like, oh, only Texas, because we used to be one of the only states that seemed to care. More and more states are, it seems to me like starting to care because they don't like the influence.
Last time I really looked, I think Texas was one of five that had one on the books. I'm not sure. I think California and Texas are the major enforcers over time. So.